Chapter 65. Jack, 11. Jack Sun-Sun Valano, truthless of Shinovar, pulled his cloak tight as he stood atop a stone hill, watching northward. The wind was indeed strong here in the lands of the east. He could feel it even when there was no high storm. In Shinovar, trees and brush blocked its wrath. But in Kanar, the only foliage grew low to the ground, quelled by the wind's domineering will. Almost he could believe the wind to be a god, as the Easterners believed. It certainly did seem almighty at times. To the north, men were dying. Avin's army was still a day's march from Crossguard, sequestered in a large rift in the ground, remarkably undiscovered. The Vaden Point men had done their work well. Elokar and Dalinar would be fools if they didn't suspect something, but Avin hoped they blamed each other for their missing scouts and dead messengers. Jack thought he could see the battlefield. It was a clear, bright day, despite the wind. There was a dark blot on the horizon. Armies? Perhaps, but it was equally likely that Jack's eyes were simply seeing what his mind thought that they should. The messenger came on time, his red and white pass flag flapping very prominently from the saddle. His news would be several hours old now. He had probably left Crossguard the moment the fight between Elokar and Dalinar had begun. Jack tracked the man's horse, then turned and walked back toward the camp. He reached Avin's pavilion before the messenger and waited quietly for the horseman to approach. Avin stood at a map table that had been erected in the open air before the pavilion. Several of Ilhadal's generals stood nearby, chatting quietly with their king. Avin was friendly but reserved, dignified without seeming removed. He was exactly the type of leader the Vaden people liked, young, handsome, straight-backed, and disciplined. Whoever had trained Avin to act this part had done a good job. The generals treated Avin with respect, and he in turn listened carefully to their suggestions. His willingness to listen made him seem wise, yet the way he spoke when he made the final decisions left no question as to who was in charge. And Vadens always felt more comfortable when they knew exactly who was in charge.
"I wonder if Ilhadal realizes how thoroughly his army has been stolen from him," Jack thought.
The Devar First Prince probably thought himself still in control. However, he would never be a force in Kanaran politics again. The generals quieted as one of them noticed the approaching messenger. To the side, Jack noticed Balinmar, the aged Aleth counselor, step from his tent and wander toward the table. The elderly man's eyes were curious. The messenger dismounted, then rushed forward with the bearing of one who had important information. He stopped before Avin's table, dropping to one knee.
"The battle has begun, my lord," the man informed. "It began soon after dawn, both armies engaging at once. The final counts put Dalinar Kul Inn with near 21,000 troops, and King Elokar with 26. Elokar has 35 shardbearers, but Dalinar only 26.
The generals nodded at the information.
"The king has the advantage, then,"
one of them declared to general assent. Both armies were well rested, and previous counts had placed Elokar with more archers and better equipment than Dalinar. They also had the advantage of several towers captured from Crossguard, as well as the city walls to use as archer stations. Elokar's force trumped that of Dalinar in every area.
"The Tyrant Bane will win the day," Avin said.
The talk grew quiet.
"Why do you say that, Your Majesty?"
one of the generals finally ventured.
"Because he is Dalinar Kul Inn,"
Avin said simply, as if his reasoning were obvious.
"Elokar has the edge in men and equipment, but that edge is slight. Dalinar's men will fight harder, for they best believe in the nobility of their lord. On the morrow, when our own forces attack, we will face Dalinar Kul Inn, and not his foolish nephew."
The generals glanced at each other, but they obviously had too much respect to contradict their liege.
"Either way," one offered, "it will be a broken army we face.
Delanar's arrival was certainly fortunate. Once the Aleth destroy one another, there won't be any left to resist us.
This restored the mood, and the generals turned to interrogating the messenger for specific troop placements so that they could theorize how the battle would proceed. Avan dismissed himself from their group with an acknowledging nod, then strolled over to stand beside Jack. He didn't speak for a moment, instead watching the generals deliberate. The man was different when he was in public. He had a charismatic, aristocratic air about him. Regal, even. Jack could almost believe him to be an honorable man.
"You were surprised at my words," Avan finally said, turning to look at Jack.
"Yes," Jack admitted.
"You disagree?"
"No, actually," Jack said. "But I did not expect to hear you speak of nobility and honor. I would have thought that you would view Delanar Kolin as a fool and a traditionalist."
Avan smiled to himself. He glanced back at the generals and their aides for a few more moments before returning to the conversation with Jack.
"What do men want in a leader, assassin?" he asked.
Jack frowned.
"Eastern men or Shin men?"
"They are the same," Avan said.
"Hardly."
Jack did not wish to argue the point, however.
"Men look for strength. They want a leader who makes wise decisions, and moral men seek a leader who will act with honor."
"Close," Avan said. "They do look for honor, but it is not morality that spurs them to do so. It is guilt."
Avan turned away from Jack, looking over his army.
"Man's greatest desire is to delude himself, assassin. He seeks every opportunity to do so. In love, in faith, and especially in war. It is vital that soldiers be able to convince themselves that their leader is honorable, for only then can they place their sins upon him. They can pretend not to think. They can simply do as they are told. This is why men gravitate toward leaders with grand reputations for honor. Deep inside, however, we all know the truth. The leader's duty is to accept the guilt of his followers, to give them reasons to kill, to lie about his nobility, so they can cling to their fabricated beliefs."
Generals deliberated and soldiers chatted, but Jack only heard the wind above. The leader's duty is to accept the guilt of his followers. Suddenly a number of things made sense.
"That's why you do it," Jack whispered. "The random killings. You're trying to force yourself to be heartless."
"A leader cannot afford a conscience, assassin," Avan said quietly. "He must be strong where his people are weak. When the difficult decisions arrive, he will have to make them. Everyone will expect him to make them. Invading another kingdom, causing the deaths of thousands. No regular man could be expected to bear the guilt of such a decision. But a leader, a king, this is what they ask of him."
Jack suppressed a shiver. There was a twisted nobility to the concept, and it unnerved him.
Bajardin thought differently.
"Bajardin the Wise," Avan asked with amusement, "author of The Way of Kings? Assassin, I learned these things from him."
Jack snorted.
"Then you weren't listening very carefully. Bajardin, Vandalarana in our tongue, is the only Kanaran man to ever be granted a truth name by the Shin."
"And your people were wise to do so," Avan said, "for Bajardin truly understood the ways of men. What is The Way of Kings? A book that describes the ideal leader, a nobleman who sacrifices his will for the good of his people. Bajardin's sovereign is a perfect man, a man of nobility, of mercy, and of virtue. An impossibility. Bajardin set up an ideal that cannot be reached, and he did it intentionally, as an object lesson He wanted to prove that no man could be what his people desired. Yet at the same time, Bajardin showed that this ideal man is what the leader must appear to be. The more perfectly a leader maintains the appearance that he is infallible, the more his soldiers will be able to ignore their own guilt, and the better they will fight. But if he falls... Jack shook his head. Disgust welled within him.
You are a broken embarrassment of a king, Avan Vedanel, he said quietly.
Oh, Avan asked. And what of you? What of the murders you have committed? The helpless and the young. What of their slaughters?
Those were your...
Jack broke off. My fault, Avan said, smiling slightly. My guilt, not yours. You are a tool.
Your earlier logic does not hold, Jack said angrily. I don't look to you for honor.
That is because for you the illusion is broken, Avan said, and for that you hate me. If, however, I were someone you wanted to trust, say, one of your Shin holy men, things would be different. What if one of your stone shamans ordered you to kill a child? What if he convinced you that that child's death would protect the greater good? Your shamans are the only ones who can order a violation of your all-powerful truth, are they not?
They would never do such a thing, Jack said. You think you understand our ways, but you know nothing. The whole Tental would not command the death of an innocent as you have.
Oh? Avan asked. And what of the invasion nearly 20 years ago? Jack paused.
That was different.
Was it? Avan prompted. You sided with Jarna, the conqueror. You invaded the Kanaran peninsulas, slaying thousands, capturing Thelana, Vedanar, and Prala. And you did it all upon the word of your shamans, who claimed the return had come again, that the storm shades had returned to Roshar. Jack held his gaze firm, but he felt like looking away in shame. The Jarna invasion was something few Shin wished to discuss. What happened at the end, assassin? Avan asked. Did you find any demons to slay? Or did you just find innocent soldiers? What of the claimed return? 17 years have passed without sign of any monsters come to destroy humankind. Your shamans were wrong, but you listened to them anyway. You killed upon their word, conquered just as I do. What did your shamans see? Were their visions wrong? Or perhaps did they have a simpler motive? A desire to capture the lands to the east? An excuse?
Enough! Jack snapped.
Avan nodded with sagacious understanding.
You understand nothing, idiot king, Jack thought furiously. You twist and pervert.
The self-convincing, however, wasn't strong enough to dispel the questions Avan had raised. Jack stood for a few uncomfortable minutes wrestling with what the idiot king had said, until an annoyed Ilhadal appeared on the scene.
Why was I not informed of the messenger's arrival? The hefty man demanded.
Obviously you were, Lord Devar, Avan said smoothly. Otherwise you wouldn't be here.
Only because I left one of my men here to watch in case news arrived, Ilhadal said. I'm leader of House Devar. I should be sent for before an important messenger gives his report.
One of the generals mumbled something to his companions, who smiled in agreement. There was a general opinion that Ilhadal shouldn't leave aides to listen to the battle plans, but attend the meetings himself. However, Ilhadal hadn't returned to the battle meetings ever since embarrassing himself on the first day, when he had displayed a noted lack of tactical understanding. An oversight, Avan promised. No offense was intended, Lord Devar. Besides, this wasn't really an important messenger.
He simply told us that the battle had begun, but we knew that it would anyway. Ilhadal looked partially soothed by the words.
The two Aleth forces have met, then? When do we march?
Soon, Arvin promised. Tomorrow morning, likely. We will arrive that evening, then attack the following morning. Whatever forces are left will give us little trouble. Though if you wish, you may join with our generals as they plan our attack.
Ilhadal paled just slightly.
I have no time, he said. I must prepare my men to march. Good day, Arvin.
The king smiled as Ilhadal scrambled away, a host of attendants and aides trailing behind him.
That man will have to be dealt with eventually, Arvin said quietly, so only Jack could hear. I cannot have a man beneath me, even a house leader who shows such disrespect. It weakens the soldier's confidence in me.
Jack found himself nodding, then paused. He would never be able to take one of Arvin's comments about leadership the same way again.
He needn't be killed, Jack said quietly. You could always just embarrass him. That seems to work well with...
He trailed off as he realized Arvin wasn't watching his lips. The king's eyes were instead focused on something in the distance. Jack turned, squinting against the late morning light, and made out another rider approaching, pass flag flapping in the wind. Like the previous messenger, the man approached Arvin's pavilion directly. When he dismounted, it was obvious from his expression that he bore urgent and probably unpleasant news. Jack frowned. He didn't recognize the messenger, a youthful, thin man, short enough that he could have been mistaken for a child, a long-distance messenger, chosen for his post because of his light body.
"You aren't from the battlefield,"
Arvin said with surprise, just as Jack realized the same thing.
"You came from Rhal Aram."
"Yes, my majesty. I bring important news."
Arvin frowned, glancing at the generals. He obviously wasn't pleased that the messenger had sought him out in public.
"Does this relate to the war against Alethkar?" Arvin asked carefully.
"Not directly, my lord,"
the wiry messenger said. Relief flashed briefly in Arvin's eyes.
"Then we will speak in private," he said, gesturing toward the pavilion.
The messenger nodded.
"Yes, your majesty."
Jack trailed behind the two and was not forbidden, though Arvin did glance at him.
"He probably expects to have to send me to kill someone,"
Jack realized as he pulled the tent flap closed.
"Speak quietly," Arvin said to the messenger, "and do not repeat your message to anyone else. If you have bad news, I will need to control it for the good of the army. We go to war on the morrow."
"I understand, my lord," the messenger said.
"Good. What is your news?"
"It's about your wife, my lord," the man said uncomfortably. "She appears to be in league with the Aleths."
Arvin actually paled.
"What happened?"
"She fled the city, my lord," the messenger said. "She helped Lord Dalinar's son and the other Aleth noblemen escape, then fled with them through the oath gates."
Arvin reached out as if looking for something to steady himself. His eyes flashed shock, then uncertainty, then finally rage, a deep, wild rage, so passionate that it made him tremble. Jack watched with interest, and the messenger took a step back in surprise. Arvin gritted his teeth, eyes wide, breathing deep as a buried instability manifested. Jack had always wondered if it were there. A man such as Arvin could not be completely sane.
"Where did she go?"
Arvin finally forced out between hissing breaths.
We don't know, my lord. The oath gates have stopped working."
"All of them?"
Yes, my lord,"
the messenger said. Arvin's struggle to regain control of himself was manifest in his twisting expressions. Eventually, he pointed toward another room of the pavilion.
"Go there," he told the messenger, "and stay. Speak to no one."
Even as the messenger was bowing his response, Arvin stalked from the room with a hurried gait. Jack trailed behind, walking from the tent and passing the curious generals. Ovan walked only a short distance toward a dark brown tent that Jack had never seen him enter. Jack frowned as they approached, realizing he didn't even know the tent's purpose. It was in the Lord's section of the camp, but it flew no glyphs or other identification. It was tucked out of the way, off the main pathways, though it did bear a couple of soldiers as guards. The men bowed as Ovan approached, but the king didn't acknowledge them. He threw back the entrance flaps with an impatient gesture, then stalked into the room beyond. Jack slipped in behind and was met by a familiar sight. It must have been difficult to transport the large onyx block so far, but apparently Ovan thought the gain worth the effort. The three youthful seers sat atop the black stone as they had in the temple back in Vaden City. Except this time, one of them, the youngest boy, lay on his back instead of sitting. The boy was not moving. The other two sat, staring at their trickling sands and the patterns they made on the floor.
"What is happening?" Ovan demanded without preface. "The girl is lost to me, and the earth gates have collapsed."
I don't know," said the oldest of the three seers, a girl of perhaps 16 years. There was a powerful weariness to her voice, and more than a bit of frustration.
"You don't know?" Ovan Obit screamed. "Tell me what you see."
"You're pushing them too hard, my lord," said a robed figure at the side. "They don't have the—" Ovan held up a stiff hand, cutting the man off.
"Speak," he commanded the female seer.
"It's muddy," she complained. "Someone is changing things."
"Someone?" Ovan asked. "This windrunner you warned me about?"
"No,"
the girl said. Jack stepped closer, trying to get a better look at the youths in the dark light. The air was musty with incense, light provided only by a dim brazier.
"It's not him," the girl continued. "It must be a seer. One of us. Another one somewhere." "So powerful," said the seer beside her, the boy who was sitting up. "He's so powerful."
"He? Who is he?"
Ovan prodded. The girl shook her head.
"Everything used to be clear, but now it's as if someone has reached out and scattered my sand."
"He's interfering intentionally?" Ovan asked.
"No," the girl said. "He's just so powerful that he makes it difficult for the rest of us. His light is bright enough to make the shadows of what we might have seen disappear." "He helped take the Else Collar," the boy whispered, "and she is linked to everything. We told you to take her and to hold her, but you let her go. She is the key. He who controls her controls the world."
Ovan gritted his teeth, but most of his rage appeared to have dissipated. He was in control again, though he was still obviously frustrated. He glanced at the third child, the one who was lying on his back. Jack edged a little closer and saw, to his horror, that the child wasn't just resting. The young boy was staring sightlessly into the air, his eyes blank. His body was rigid and motionless, a bit of spittle dribbling slowly down his cheek. Somehow Jack knew this was no trance or passing fit. Something had happened, something that had taken the child's mind.
"When did he go?"
Ovan asked, nodding toward the boy.
"A short time ago, my lord," the cloaked figure said. "We were going to tell you tonight." "The void took him," the female seer whispered. "He saw something in the sands that frightened him."
"What?"
Ovan demanded. The girl shook her head.
"He wouldn't tell us, but it scared him, terrified him. The muddled sands wouldn't tell him any more about it, and he grew frustrated. He looked where men should not, though we told him not to. He had to know,"
the non-comatose boy said.
"It calls to us, you know, the knowledge."
Jack shivered, backing away from the pedestal and its youthful seers. Avin, however, looked more annoyed than he did frightened.
"Only two left, and they are of no use," the king said. "Keep looking. Do not rest until you discover where that girl has gone."
The female seer nodded, though from the look of her tired face, Jack doubted she would be able to remain awake much longer. Avin stared at the seers for a moment longer, then turned and threw the tent flaps out of his way and stalked outside. He pointed at the first guard he saw.
"You," he commanded.
"Yes, my lord," the man said.
"Go to the generals by my pavilion," he told the messenger. "Give them an order on my behalf."
"What order, my lord?"
the soldier asked.
"Tell them to prepare the men to march," Avin said. "We leave for Crossguard within the hour."
"Yes, my lord,"
the guard said, then bowed and backed away.
"Crossguard?"
Jack asked with surprise.
"There has been enough waiting already," Avin said. "I will sit no longer. It is time to attack."
"The generals won't like moving this quickly," Jack noted carefully.
Avin's temper was probably still lurking beneath the newly restored calm face.
"Their preference is immaterial," Avin said. "By the time we arrive, Elokar and Dalinar will likely have finished killing one another. Even if they haven't, their separate forces will be weakened irreparably. I will not wait 3 more days to claim Alethkar. We march tonight."
Jack nodded, more because he saw the inevitability of the march than because he agreed with it. Besides, there was another topic he was curious about.
"What happened to that boy?"
he asked, glancing back toward the brown tent.
"It takes them all eventually," Avin said with a dismissive gesture. "The temptation to look is too great."
"To look at what?" Jack asked.
Avin glanced at him, annoyance glaring in his eyes. Jack bowed his head, a signal that he was done asking questions.
"I'm trying to decide whether to send you after her or not," Avin finally said.
"Who?"
Jack asked.
"Your wife?"
"She should not have run," Avin said. "I warned her what would happen if she disobeyed me."
"Why send me after her?"
Jack protested. "We don't even know where she went. Are you certain you want to waste me on another frivolous chase?" Avin didn't answer. He turned and stared toward the army. Men were already starting to bustle about. The messenger had obviously spread his news. The generals would soon come looking for Avin, demanding an explanation.
"You will hunt her eventually," Avin decided. "But not today. Come, we have preparations to make."